Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Living Stone Podcast, a digital ministry of Greystone Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm Pastor Chrissy, and I'm here with Steve Rose. We are so excited because today we're launching a five-part series on Joan Chittister's amazing book, Scarred by Struggle, Transformed by Hope. Now, I first got this book, read it when I was in graduate school at Wake Forest, and I liked it okay then. I mean, it's a good book. She's a good writer. But something happened in the last couple of weeks when we were closing down the church office, and I was kind of doing my final pass of the bookshelves, reading the titles on the spines, and I saw Scarred by Struggle. I might need that. So I grabbed it off my shelf and threw it in my bag, loaded down with books, and brought it home. And I have been glued to this book. I've read it and reread it and reread it in these 8 weeks that we've been home. And I think it has a powerful message for us today. So I reached out to Steve and said, hey, Steve, are you up for a good podcast book conversation?
Right. And I agree with you. It's a kind of book that when I picked it up, I had a hard time putting it down. And I have reread many things in this book. Although I've completed, I've reread sections time after time. As a reader, I don't read a lot of this kind of writing, so I'm kind of glad you asked me to take a look at it. I've read some things by Eugene Peterson, and when I prepare my Sunday school talks, I get some background from William Barclay, but I don't necessarily read a lot of these kinds of books. So this was a pleasant surprise for me and a good learning experience. I thought we might talk a little bit about who Joan Chittister is. So I took a few notes. I've been visiting her website, her blog, listening to some audio podcasts and some things, and found her to be an incredibly interesting person, a great spiritual teacher, a great writer and thinker, and she's very well known. And yeah. Anyway, and this book speaks to so many things, but And when I read it, and it was new to me, I thought, well, this could have been written last year. And when I checked the date, I think it was 2003.
Yeah.
And so, but some of the things that she comments about are very timely with respect to our society today and so many other things. So not having read any of the books previously, like I said, I went to her the podcast and some other things. I found out that she has been on Oprah Winfrey. She's appeared with Tim Russert and Bill Moyers on television programming. She's just very well and widely known. From her website, here's a little quote. Joan Chittister is considered one of the most influential religious and social leaders of our time. For 40 years, she has passionately advocated on behalf of peace, human rights, women's issues, and church renewal. A much sought-after speaker, counselor, and clear voice that bridges across all religions, she is also a best-selling author of more than 50 books, hundreds of articles, an online column for the National Catholic Reporter, and a blog for the Huffington Post. She has received numerous writing awards and honors for her work and is a noted international lecturer. As with any writer, I'd like to know kind of what makes them tick. I've read many great writers over the years. I was absorbed in English and American literature for a long time and the great works of fiction. In recent years, I've kind of migrated toward reading history and a lot of nonfiction stuff, especially biographies, because I'm intrigued by people and great leaders and what makes them tick. So I was impressed by everything that I kind of found out about her. Kind of to get a better understanding of her overall work and to provide a broader context for my own reading of this particular work of hers. The more you learn about her, the greater her appeal, I think. While she is a longtime member of the Benedictine Sisters based in Erie, Pennsylvania, where she grew up as a child, I think she writes from a perspective that transcends what we might think of as Roman Catholic. While the central story in this book is one from the Old Testament about Jacob and is considered in that Judeo-Christian tradition, she incorporates her understanding of the thinking and aspirations of many world religions, such that the story really has a universal appeal and relevance. As a result of this and her many other writings, I think she has real credibility with leaders of many faiths, not only because of her depth and breadth of knowledge, but because of her deep understanding of human nature and human aspirations. And especially when she talks about, and I've listened to some of this from her other podcast, a deep understanding of the purpose of human existence. And with that, I think, Chrissy, let's just talk about this, what the book is about, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I love that you ended there talking about kind of her, the way that she speaks to people of all faiths. There's a paragraph on in part of the preface where she talks about how every major spiritual revelation known to humankind is in fact based on the bedrock of hope. And so she sets out, now you and I've read the book, right? So we kind of know her journey with hope, but she sets out to write a book on hope. And, in fact, I want to read the very first couple sentences of the book, because this is what grips me every time I pick this book up. I can't read anything unless I've read this sentence and then I flip to where I'm actually going. So she goes, "This is the book I didn't want to write." Immediately I'm hooked. I'm like, yes, this is every sermon I sit down to write. It's the one I didn't want to write, right?
Yeah.
This book, she says, is certainly the book I did not intend to write. My original plan was that I would write a book about hope. It is, after all, particularly unpredictable and often difficult in human existence. So she goes on, and then she says basically that as she tried to wrestle out a book on hope, what she found was the story was about struggle. And then she goes on to say that every spiritual revelation known to humankind is in fact based on the bedrock of hope, but that that hope is born out of struggle. And in Christianity, obviously, that story for us is the story of death and resurrection, which we see it. We see periods of death and opportunities for resurrection. We see God breathing new life into the world throughout the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, through the words of the prophets, and in the story and witness of Jesus, and then again in the story and witness of the first church. And I think we forget that because a lot of times our Christian practice becomes about only hope. And we only want to talk about the good stuff. And I think for us, I'm just going to go on a limb and say most of the people in this congregation, maybe most of the people who are listening to the podcast, have relatively stable lives. Now, I know that's a gross overstatement when we're talking about the world and our city. But there's a stability that we've come to know. And here in the midst of a global pandemic, everything is uncertain. And I don't think that I have the muscles and the stamina to live in a constant state of uncertainty. It feels like struggle. So this book, she bases it on the story of Jacob wrestling with the stranger overnight. And so many things happen in that biblical narrative. So Jacob is alone in the middle of the night, and an unknown stranger wrestles with him all night long. And they seem to be evenly matched. But then at the very end, just before daybreak, he gets sucker punched and his hip is like thrown out of joint. And so for the rest of his life, he walks with a limp and his name has changed. He's no longer Jacob, he's Israel. And so when I think about that moment, it's an experience of death and resurrection. It's death to who he was and birth to who he's going to be, the father, the patriarch of a whole nation of Israel. So it makes me look at this current struggle with a different kind of lens. We're not yet at daybreak. We're not yet ready. We don't know what our limp's going to be, but we know it's coming. And so there's a hope or an optimism in the question of what does this new life look like on the other side of struggle?
And so, Jacob walks away differently. He's got a limp. And one of the central points I think she makes throughout this book is that with conflict and struggle, when you encounter struggle, you are going to be unalterably changed.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if you get through it. And a lot of the message in her writing is about getting through that struggle. And that's where you meet hope and working through, and rather than trying to run away from the fight, which Jacob, he persisted and he fought through to the next day. Anyway.
You got to give him credit for that.
Absolutely.
He didn't run.
And so that was a message that really met me powerfully throughout the book. I can reflect. And in fact, those words that you mentioned about this is certainly not the book I intended to write. And she came to a different place in a realization. And I remember reading what she wrote about her interactions with so many other people in faith leaders and other writers and people she collaborated with to kind of get some sense of direction out of this. But the direction she went with is great. If I look at the book overall, it's, and this is kind of, well, I don't want to get so much what I like about it, but one of the things that interests me as a reader of literature and as a former teacher of English many years ago is that I like the way she develops the idea. It's a clear central theme. The writing is clear. It's very understandable. It's direct, relatable. She kind of weaves in the simple and direct with more very sublime and incredibly profound statements about human existence and theology and other things that she weaves into it that have given me, that kind of excite me about reading this book and make me want to reread it. Because I don't think I always get it the first time, maybe, or I just haven't quite absorbed it all. But yeah, I kind of feel that same enthusiasm in approaching the book that to indicate.
I am really glad the English teacher in the room just said, I don't always get it the first time I read a book. Because I feel very, I feel solidarity with you in that, Steve.
Right. Well, yeah. As one who would try to teach a real hard piece of poetry in particular, it took many readings to kind of get into it. But you can always get something out of her first pass. It's just worth rereading many times to kind of get down to the depth of where she's coming from.
Oh, yeah.
And she speaks with such incredible conviction. You just feel like she knows you. I think I mentioned to you when we first started talking about this book that when I read this book, I feel like I'm kind of looking into a mirror of myself, a kind of reflection. I see myself, and even though her life experiences are way different from mine, I can kind of empathize with her because of the way she speaks about different struggles and aspects of struggle and seems to identify the characteristics of those struggles. And the counterpart of that, of course, is finding hope in each of those situations.
Mm-hmm.
And as one who's I know what you said, I think, is kind of true. We tend to be, a lot of us lead fairly stable, comfortable lives. We do encounter illness and we encounter death. When I think about my own experiences, they may pale in comparison with some of hers even, which are pretty incredible. And with those of others that are suffering in the world with whom I have a lot of empathy, but not a direct, you know, kind of, I can't really relate directly to that, but I still see myself and I feel an empathy with others in reading this book too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, that kind of speaks to how this book can be a toolkit for people who want to live an authentic relationship with other people, or for people who are in a part of a faith community. You know, one of our core principles is that we share life together. And, right now we're all in a similar struggle with a global pandemic called coronavirus. Hopefully 10 years from now, this will not be our struggle. Hopefully we won't be in another health crisis that we're all sharing. But at any given moment, each of us is in some kind of crisis.
Right.
And often we don't talk about it because we're not sure that people can go there with us, that they can understand kind of what we're feeling and thinking. And we certainly don't want to be a voice of like false hope. We don't want to go to a grieving mother and say, you know, it's okay. God had a plan. It's all right. So what I think that Joan offers us is a better lexicon and a better understanding of how do we use our collective experiences and our unique experiences to speak to others, the unique experiences of others. And
right.
The way that she does that, you hinted at it, is she names, you know, the whole book is in this context of struggle and hope, two sides of the same coin often. But she talks about these words that are, they just transcend every specific situation. Like some of the things we're going to be talking about in the next few episodes are isolation. Everybody knows isolation, but she pairs it with independence. So the struggle is isolation and the gift is independence. She talks about fear and courage in the same way. We all have had moments of deep, bone-shattering fear, but to remind us that courage grows out of that is authentic. It doesn't deny the grief of the struggle. I think that's what I'm trying to meander to. Is she doesn't deny the impact, the magnitude, the grief of the struggle, but she does pair it with a spiritual gift, hope, independence, courage. We're going to be talking about vulnerability and limitations, the gift of kind of understanding and accepting our limitations. And then finally, the struggle of exhaustion and the gift of endurance that comes out of that. And so, you know, while some of our examples may be specific to this moment in time, and I think some of us, you know, you and I are going to have different personal examples as we continue to talk about these chapters, there is a universality of it that speaks to everyone's particularity. And I love that about her work.
She does say that ultimately, you talk about isolation and things, about the journey that each of us takes in life is very unique. It's unique to us.
Yeah.
And there are times when each of us is apart from almost the rest of humanity because of what we feel we're going through. I wanted to point out one other observation that she makes about in the preface about this book not being a self-help manual, which I think we've touched on. This book is not a self-help manual. It is not a series of steps to anything. It is rather an anatomy of struggle and an account of the way hope grows within us despite our moments of darkness, regardless of our regular bouts of depression. It is an invitation to look again at the struggles of life in order that we might remember how to recognize new life in our souls the next time our hearts turn again to clay, as turn they surely will. That was at the close of her preface to the book, and I thought that was invaluable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hooked.
Right.
I'm totally hooked. And as we're talking and we're, I love, so Steve and I have not compared notes about what we underlined. So as we go through this thing, I'm fascinated to see where our underlines are the same. And in fact, if you're listening to the podcast and you haven't yet purchased a copy of the book, I dare you to buy it and not underline anything. Like, I triple dog dare you. It's that good. Your pen will run out of ink. It's so good.
Like I highlighted so many things, and then I went back and I said, I don't know why I didn't highlight that other thing. It's just as profound. One of the things that I think is there's really no wasted text or anything in this book. It is, it's almost all quotable. It's almost all relevant. I could start on almost any page in any paragraph, and I could get where she's going with that and derive something from it. I think in the way the whole story flows, though, everything is connected. Mm-hmm. There's great connectivity, and which I don't find in a lot of what I call spiritual or religious kinds of writers, because some of them wander around in the weeds, I think, a good bit to make a point. But she's consistently on the path, and she offers depth and different analogies, but she's kind of, there's, it's clear where she's going with those things.
Yeah. Well, there's obviously so much to talk about. And I just can't wait to get into each chapter. For those of you who are going to be staying with us for the next four episodes, I wanted you to know we're going to talk about chapters 6 and 7, which are isolation and independence. Then we're going to move to 10 and 11, fear and courage. And then we'll talk about 14 and 15, vulnerability and limitations. And then we'll wrap it up talking about exhaustion and endurance, even though that's not where the book stops. It's actually 24 chapters crammed into, I don't know, it's a short book, maybe 120 pages or so. So if you like short chapters, if you like good content, if you're into a spiritual journey that doesn't deny struggle, this book's for you, and we hope you'll join us.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Chrissy.